Thank you, Wouter. Ladies and gentlemen, indeed, it's a pleasure to be able to speak to you as the host of the afternoon, Carnegie Foundation responsible for the maintenance of the Peace Palace and for the hosting of the international organizations. As Wouter said, I have a long history in the Dutch government and at last in the Ministry of Justice, so I would like to take the opportunity to say a few things about transnational crime and about drug trafficking. But first, I would like to say a few things about peacemaking, one of the items of the report. And what has struck me that there is, in one given case, which was the sometimes hostile situation between Peru and Ecuador concerning the protection of nature on their borders, peace had been brought about by the intervention of a third party, a group of countries consisting of Brazil, Argentina, Chile, and the US. And the result was the creation of a peace park, a zone of environmental protection which stretches on two sides of the border and which is managed by the national agencies but on a bilateral basis. The interesting part for me is the intervention by this group of states, because this seems to be a rather effective method. But I do not think that we would see much of it in this part of the world. Let us go back for a minute to the difficult question of the pollution of the River Rhine by the upstream countries, France and Germany. That problem has been a real embarrassment for many in the Netherlands, and fortunately one can say that over the years it has been resolved by diplomatic means. But it would have been rather astonishing to see a third state, say Sweden or the UK, or even a group of third states, to help bring about a solution. I don't think we have ever contemplated that. And yet it is often an independent third party that can break a deadlock and push the parties to a mediated settlement. So I think that the use of states as honest brokers can be potentially fruitful in order to bring an environmental dispute to an end, especially the issues of shared natural resources or the cross-border pollution can be loaded with national feelings, which will make any concessions almost impossible. Just imagine the transboundary risks of nuclear installations, which sometimes happen to be located rather close to the boundary of a neighboring state. A dispute can easily break out over the planning of those facilities, and then you have two parties that cannot come to terms with each other. The use of the word mediation brings me to the possible role of the Peace Palace. We always tend to think about the Peace Palace as the home of international dispute settlement with judicial means. And that is true. The International Court of Justice has a separate chamber for matters pertaining to the environment, but so far no use has been made of that facility. And the Permanent Court of Arbitration also has developed special rules for environmental arbitrations, and effectively they're involved in one between the UK and Ireland now. The Peace Palace could, however, also be used as the setting for an important international negotiation or a quiet mediation with the help of this third-party approach. It would not be necessary to go for the involvement of a third party, as mediation and conciliation are already in the mandate of this Permanent Court of Arbitration. But my essential remark is, in this connection, that a government often needs a little push in the right direction, because they have a natural ability to stay clear from any risk of losing a case. And that is why relatively little litigation takes place in this House, because simply governments do not consider the option of losing it. So much about the peace element. Now a few words about transnational crime and narcotic drugs. The report has a small portion which is devoted to transnational crime, but the figures in that small portion are, however, staggering. On page 20 of the book, it says that in 2003, the transnational crime syndicates may have grossed up to 2 trillion, which I think is 2,000 billion, more than all national economies except for the economies of the US, Japan, and Germany. And the bulk of crime syndicate revenues comes from drug trafficking. There is, of course, much international action to combat this form of crime. There is a new treaty of the UN against transnational organized crime, which was signed by now over 140 countries in the world, and basically they did that during the signing ceremony in Palermo in Italy in 2000. And the treaty has entered into force. One of the essential provisions is the rule concerning money laundering. Not only should money laundering be a crime under national law, but also all financial institutions have to apply a system of notification of suspicious transactions. Within the EU, all this is strictly regulated. The better all countries in the world cooperate in this banking area, the more difficult it is for crime syndicates to store their money and to flash it around the world. The problem is that some tax havens find it difficult to subscribe to these important principles. The efforts in the world to get to grips with the production, the trafficking and consumption of narcotic drugs can be described as fixing the leak in the bath while the tap runs freely. It is an accepted expression of policy that both demand for drugs should be reduced and the supply, that is to say the production, has to be curbed. It is generally considered, as it is said in the report, that the guerrilla movement in Colombia is driven by the proceeds of the coca plantations, next to proceeds of extortion or of hostage taking. If world terrorism is centered in Afghanistan, it was already mentioned, the country was mentioned, the production of heroin will no doubt be responsible for financing of many of the activities. Not too long ago, the UN narcotics chief, Mr. Costa from UNODC, said that nearly all production of opium comes from Afghanistan and that crop levels have reached record levels in 2004. The opium economy contributes for 52% in the gross domestic product of Afghanistan. He called for stricter measures to make engagement in drug production less attractive, and he called for assistance to farmers in order to switch to legal production. But this will be a long shot, as the alternatives for farmers are not so clear. So it is a matter of fact that the international prohibition of the drug production has led to a criminal industry which produces the income for illegal movements. Illegal drugs pay for illegal terrorism. Illegal drugs disrupt societies, not only the societies where the drugs are consumed, but also the societies where the drugs are produced and where they are transported. So the key question I ask myself is how the world can free itself from this visible impasse. The general point of my comment is that it would seem an essential step to start a review of the international treaties which ban the non-medical use of narcotics. In other words, to evaluate the benefits and the disadvantages of the system that we have created at world level. I've come to the conclusion or the finding that it is practically impossible to change a regime once it has been adopted, and regime means a treaty regime. This is, to my feeling, particularly true for the conventions on which all drug policy is based. There is a single convention from 1960, there's one of 1971 on psychotropic substances, and there's one on illicit trade of 1988. So my idea is a general rethink of the basis of those conventions against the background of the criminal consequences and an opportunity, so therefore, to ask ourselves if we are on the right track. I'm not advocating a legalization of the drugs at this point in time, but it would not be a good idea, but wouldn't it be a good idea if a group of high-level experts, just like the Brundtland Commission for the Environment, would study the international drug policy as it has developed over the years and give an assessment of the problems which are related to the drugs issue. What I hope that such a wise commission would do is to verify the current knowledge of the dangers of drugs, that is to say, the various types of drugs, both hard drugs as heroin and soft drugs as cannabis, the practice of the use of the drugs, the negative effects it has on people and on society. But on the other hand, the Commission would also look at the results obtained by law enforcement, assess the potential of alternative crop development, is there really an alternative for farmers, and it would try to answer the question if the burden for the national system of police and the judiciary caused by drugs are really acceptable. The most difficult issue would be to make a comparison of the cost of the prohibition of the drugs and the benefits for society which stem from curbing the use of drugs. I think for the benefit of time, I will stop here. I have a little bit more text, but this is the essence of my idea. Create a world commission to rethink the whole issue. Thank you very much.